Oh,
Welcome to our new podcast.
Can you guess what game people have been playing?
That's right, it's Dota 2.
Yeah, you can answer in like five different ways and it'll be true.
It's
It's
true.
the Where Do We Begin podcast. Which things did we even play? I'm Log.
I'm Trog.
I'm Bout.
I'm Gert.
Well, we gave you a little hint to the first game we played. It's a little something called Baldur's Gate 2.
Pussy
two.
Not
Baldur's
Baldur's Gate
Gate
2.
2.
It's not Baldur's Gate 2.
Well, it's the
They made
one
another
after
one.
2. Yeah, they
Yes.
made it. It's brand new. Baldur's Gate 3. You heard of it? It's been in the oven for a lot of years.
This is the gamer's summer, I think. I don't know what happened. All
Yeah,
these
it's kind of
games came
packed.
out.
Yeah,
It's kind of, it's really packed.
like nothing was happening for a whole year, and then it just keeps going off. Boom, boom, boom.
Boom,
Baldur's Gate
boom.
3 is just one shot in the chamber. There's a full clip.
Yep.
It's a firing squad of fun lined up for excitement.
Put your blindfold on and tie your hands behind your back because this summer we got the games for you. This is our special video game episode. We've never talked about video games on this show before. So this is
Yeah.
gonna be our this is our video game roundup summer special.
Yep,
Will this be
exactly.
the coveted episode where we don't talk about a fighting game?
Well, sorry to say, Street Fighter VI is
that is one of the
one of
games.
those is one of the
Fuck!
many
But
one of
I
the
think we
many.
talked about that. Did we talk about that last month? I can't even
Probably,
remember.
probably. That game's been out for
It's
like
been
three
out for
months
a
now,
while.
It's
right?
old.
But
Yeah. We were having a lot of fun with it, but there's like all these other games that
as Log
it's
said, the first
that
game
was
on the
just the that
docket.
was just the warning shot. And now we've got the rest of the ones to worry about. And
Because
only one officer has the Game of the Year title, so they can all not know who actually won.
yeah, that's
well
we're
said.
stretching this very we're stretching this metaphor very thin.
Well, anyways, yeah, so the big one that's been taking everybody's time, the one that has had enough time being out to take up everyone's time, that's Baldur's Gate 3. Everybody here plays Baldur's Gate 3. I don't know what Balp's been up to. Balp's been the Neverwinter Nights boy, but like I haven't heard a peep from him about Baldur's Gate 3.
I have so I back when the game was early access, I played a little bit of it, and I've just been so busy that now that the game is like out, I haven't had time to start a run yet. So it's funny because you're right. I love these games. I was playing these before anyone else did. I love Neverwinter Nights. I love these kind of old CRPGs, but no, I haven't had time to start a run yet. I think the reason why is because I did play a little bit of it back when it was early access, so I was like, all right, I have a taste. I know what it's
But
like.
that would have been
Like,
3
yeah,
or
I
4
really
years
should.
ago is the thing.
I know, it's kind of crazy. This game's been like, it's kind of wild that like, did any of us buy the game like this year? Like, we all
Nope.
bought the game
No.
like 3 years ago, and we've
Yep.
been waiting for 3 years.
Yeah, I barely even count it as a 2023 game just because I've had it for so long.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
Well, I kind of
I
feel
feel like.
like it's sort of like we played the demo a few
Yeah,
years
I'd
ago,
say
right?
that. Yeah.
We played the demo, and then we all took a long break, and now the full game is out, and we can enjoy the game in its completed state.
Yeah, so I actually haven't played as much as, I mean, I've barely scratched the surface compared to you guys, but everyone who's been playing, it seems like they're having fun. It seems like a
Yeah, it's a
very
good one of those.
it is a good it's a good game for the current like times, because I feel like Dungeons and Dragons, like when I was in high school, Dungeons and Dragons, like I would tell people I would play Dungeons and Dragons and they'd be like, "Whoa, that's like some really nerdy shit. You're that's like some real
Dork.
nerdy stuff." Yeah, and now it's like everyone plays Dungeons.
Yeah.
Like everyone has at least given it a try. Like I know like I don't know, just it's become like a more general thing now that
You know, role
it's
playing
become
is in.
trendy. Yeah.
Everybody wants to roleplay.
So I'm not surprised that this game is, like, so popular, because it's, like, it's in people's minds now. Like, oh, there's a video game that's Dungeons & Dragons? I'll play. And people seem like they're having a lot of fun.
What do you think the odds are that a bunch of people being exposed to GTA roleplay is aiding in that?
Maybe.
People
it's
looking
kind of
up
a different
other
beast, but...
They're very different.
No, but it's making them look at, like, roleplay. Like, they look into it more, and they find different kinds. Like, well, maybe I want to do something that's not, like, cops and robbers type shit. Maybe I want to do, like, knights and Star Wars.
I think they want to play... I think they want to play cops and robbers, and maybe they want
forever.
To play...
Forever.
Star Wars. They want to play Harry Potter RP...
Yeah, that's like, I disagree with you, girl, because that's like...
I didn't say
like
that was the
like,
fact. I asked what you thought.
Because I think like that kind of stuff, it's much more aimless. Like, what do you do when you go on Gary's Mod and you play an RP server? Like,
you scream into the mic and then get banned.
Yeah,
buy some money printers.
Do. Like, yeah, you can print money. You can print money to some unknown goal. What is your money going to buy? Not something.
Not something.
Really there's not a story. There's not NPCs. There's not really any like. There's nothing that's like intrinsically tied to those things because you're just like.
No, I know. I was just
people that are.
I was just saying like it's like arms. a gateway drug of like the concept of role playing. You know what I mean?
I think it's more just those podcasts.
Are they that popular?
Anything. Yeah.
Huh.
Wait, podcasts? What are you talking about?
Yeah, like those Dungeons and Dragons podcasts.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I bet those.
Oh, wait, the ones that have like celebrities that show up on it?
Yeah, and stuff like that. Like the ones that everybody just like that was like the explosion of popularity. Like everybody wants to be Matt Mercer or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's critical. Fair. So, fun fact, even though, well, I don't listen to any, I legitimately do not listen to any podcasts. I need to start listening to Pod About List because they're funny, but I haven't started listening to Pod About List, which means that technically speaking, right now, I don't listen to any podcasts, but because we have this podcast, it's funny. I like look up, like, I'm like privy to like the podcast, like popular podcast metrics because like, you see some of it here and there, and like point is like I don't listen to any of them, but I know about them, which is ironic. That Critical Role podcast is so crazy popular. They like dwarf even some podcasts that you think are like, wow, that's pretty big. Like they Critical Role is like crazy popular, which is insane to think about because like you, like I said, you go back like maybe 10 years ago and you're like, a podcast where you listen to people play Dungeons and Dragons? That's like so nerdy and niche, but like no, they're like so popular, so I'm not surprised. It definitely.
I don't know, man. 10 years ago, people were listening to what the fuck? Adventure Zone.
Gangnam Style.
Gangnam Style,
Gangnam Style.
Was huge. Everybody, you heard of this thing called Damn Style. Daniel? It's crazy. You guys, I have to show you guys this video.
I think that was 2017.
Oh, maybe it was. I don't know.
that was
what other memes were from 2013? Fucking Gangnam Style. What does the fox say?
Gangnam Style was 2012, by the way.
Whatever.
Yeah, but it lasted.
Yeah,
it
people
lasted,
are still
yeah.
talking about it. It's yeah. not even over.
But, 2013, it must have been Gentleman, right?
Oh right, yeah. That was the
next one. The follow-up.
I'm looking up 2013 memes. What the fuck are these? These are not
that's
real.
A Greek
what sign. Is this? These are not. These are not even memes.
Is someone out there trying to rewrite history? What's going on? Tell us what you see.
Well, I'm looking at a list, and I see resting bitch face as an internet meme introduced in 2013. I don't think that counts.
That's not a meme. That's just like, oh, I have resting bitch
that's
face.
A, then if,
like,
it's that's a phrase that's just like thing. The 80s.
Yeah.
What? Internet aesthetic. Hitler teapot? What are these?
What?
I don't know what this is.
Someone out here is trying to rewrite history. They're rewriting the books.
Honestly, who's keeping tabs on that stuff? They could be making new things to inject into the past.
What is this? What is any of this shit?
They just put vaporwave as a meme. Vaporwave is just a meme in 2013.
That was also before 2013.
It also put
when that started.
Like, it also has Gun Show the webcomic as an internet meme introduced in 2013. I'm gonna say that that's specifically because of the dog, you know, the This Is Fine dog.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah.
When did that one come out?
That one was from 2013, right. According to this. So that's why. I do think it's funny that you label the entire webcomic, but I guess it's because that single panel doesn't.
But what the fuck is Hitler teapot?
Who cares?
Hitler teapot was a stainless steel kettle sold in 2013 by the American retailer and department store chain JCPenney. It attracted attention on social media due to its perceived resemblance to the Nazi German dictator Adolf Hitler.
Oh, do they have Kirby or DDD drooling while eating?
No, they don't have DDD drooling while eating.
Can we explain that?
Yo, they even... you can look it up. The craziest thing on here is this list has y'all cowards don't even smoke crack on here.
Was that 2013?
Apparently. Wait, no, it wasn't. It was released in 2008. Why is this in the list for 2013?
I want a name. We gotta call someone out. Look, scroll up to the top of the article.
I think the historians are undisciplined.
No.
This is
Wikipedia. Like, this is a Wikipedia list.
All right, now swap it to Irish.
Okay, I'll look at the Irish Wikipedia. I don't know how to switch it, so we're getting off track.
Wait, hold on, we're talking about video games.
I gotta
get the answer to this. Does anybody remember anything about 2013, like at all?
I mean, I remember Gangnam Style.
That was 2012.
Do you mean like in popular culture?
I mean,
like,
at all,
my life,
at all, anything.
That was my sophomore/junior year of college. I remember going out and getting burritos with friends.
I mean, I graduated from high school, so that'd be around the time I moved to Texas.
I don't remember a fucking thing.
You don't remember Vaporwave and Doge? You don't remember the Doge meme?
I think it's because 2013 was my nothing year. Like, it was the first year out of high school where I was like, I'm going to spend 12 months doing absolutely nothing. And I did that.
You're the same age as us.
Yeah.
If I
graduated
in college,
2012.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah? I don't know why you're confused.
Balp is like, I can hear the gears in his head turning as he calculates the difference between one year and two years.
But if I was already in sophomore in college, then how were you?
Because he graduated in 2012 and then in 2013 didn't do anything. So, like, you graduated in 2011.
Okay. Whatever.
So,
good God.
All right. Anyway. All
right, now, what's 24 divided by 8?
I don't. 24 divided by 8? Wasn't
that
like...
Is that a real number?
Three. Fuck.
Is it just three?
Right.
I'm so stupid.
I'm keeping you on your toes.
Alright.
Alright,
you got me.
I was gonna say three and a half. Yeah, speaking of three, we're talking about Baldur's Gate 3.
Yes.
Part of what makes this game so attractive to the general populace is that they spent just a ridiculous amount of time giving you way more like options in most scenarios than any games like this typically give you. Like, because it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. And it's all fully voiced dialogues and stuff. It's a lot of work. But they had 6 years to work on this game.
Yeah, I love older CRPGs. But like, where they probably fell by the wayside compared to I guess JRPGs are actually what more people think of when they think of RPG games. But, like, where they fell by the wayside is, like, the scale of them was never, like, that crazy. Like, usually it's just, like, go from here to there and, like, hit attack enemies. Like, you're just
it was like a single-player MMO.
Yeah, kind of. Like, but in Baldur's Gate 3, like, Larian has really, like, upped the ante. They you get a lot of freedom. You can go about encounters in a lot of different ways, and like this is really deep. Yeah,
things go off the rails extremely if you let them. I can give an example. We'll be talking about Baldur's Gate 3 spoilers. So if you're one of the 83% of all people on Steam that have not managed to get past Act 1, maybe you don't want to hear this. So the farthest I've gotten, I think the farthest most of us have gotten, is in a multiplayer campaign with me, Trog, Gur, and Wayne. We're all together in a multiplayer campaign.
Yep.
Yep.
So as part of Act 2, you wind up in like this one village that's like safe from the dark curse or whatever. And you end up there ends up being like a fight where like some weird guys appear and try to kidnap a person. And if you let the person get kidnapped, which can be pretty easy because that person's AI is like
a joke,
fucked. And they will basically, run directly into a brick wall if you let them. Yeah, if you let that person get kidnapped, every character in the town dies and you have to fight them.
They all turn into zombies, yeah.
So, like, the normal storyline, the typical, like, good guy storyline is, like, you gathering, like, the militia force in that town and, like, storming this tower of cultists and whatever to get to the top and fight the bad guy or whatever. And like, typically it's like, yeah, you gather these guys help you get the information you need to invade the tower, and then you get them together and invade the tower. And then this one case, you lose this one fight, and all those guys are gone.
Yeah.
So, like, where do you go from there? We didn't want to figure it out, so no. We reloaded the save.
Well, okay, now to be fair, We've only saved scummed a couple times, but it's always because we feel like we had just been cheated out of
something.
Yeah,
it's because the game scummed us, not because we were being scummy.
Like, okay, we're like, all right, we gotta protect this high-value NPC. We gotta protect her. Wait, she's running out of the room and just took 3 opportunity attacks and went from, like, 30 health to 0 in a single turn, and we had no way to stop her from doing that. Because you can't control the NPCs. It's like, yeah, I think we can reload that one. That feels like some bullshit.
Yeah, and that was right off the back of, like, me exploding a barrel in a place that it wasn't supposed to be and killing just a random, like, oxen by accident and aggroing the entire town.
Yes. We'll talk about our slight grievances with the game later, but let's stick to the good stuff first.
But the scale of everything is just immense, and we've been kind of combing through the entire game, doing everything possible, and yeah, there's just so many encounters, so many like interesting things going on. Like, there's a fight that you can do towards the end of Act 1 where you just like find this giant ancient forge, and then a big robot comes out of a vent, and you have to fight the big robot. And the robot's like invincible. It's got, at that point in the time, it's like 2 levels higher than you. It's got 300 health, and it says like it's like resistant to almost every damage type, and like it's a raid boss. Like it's like you're playing World of Warcraft or Final Fantasy 14 or something like that. You have to trick it into walking into the center of the forge so you can flip a switch to drop a giant hammer on it, because the giant hammer does half its health and knocks it over. And yes. And like you have to cooperate. Multiplayer becomes a bit goofy because you have to cooperate and coordinate between everybody. Because there's a process that you have to open the magma vent to superheat the robot, and then you have to drop the hammer on the robot. So I think we wasted a couple of turns because everybody just wanted to do everything out of order as fast as possible.
True.
But yeah, like that point was like, oh, that's just super sick. This is like a huge scale boss. This is the biggest scale boss that we've fought so far, and it's got like this cool mechanic, and you have to be avoiding the lava and fighting the little enemies that pop up and stuff. Yeah, it's like you're playing an MMO, except you're playing something much better.
You want to know something great about that boss while I'm thinking about it? In my single player run, my big genius brain didn't notice, like, think about the fact that you could drop the hammer on it. So I got it to half health manually.
Damn.
And then I was like, oh, hey, wait a minute. There's a hammer. What if I drop it on him? Oh, and now the encounter's done.
Yeah, and, like, whenever we first saw it, I was looking at it like, ah, oh, man, it'd be so cool if you could lead him into the middle and drop the hammer on him. But I thought that it wouldn't let you. I thought that you weren't allowed to, like, move onto the center platform or whatever. But no, the game defeated my expectations. I should have known
See,
better.
Alternatively, I thought there's no way they expect you to not do something to like, make this fight easier because it is... They make it pretty obvious that it's, like, it's a way higher level than you'd probably normally be on a playthrough. They give you like little hints here and there as to lead you towards that as the intended solution, which I think is really cool.
Well, let's be fair, Trog. Right before that, you are basically dropped into a ridiculous fight that is basically unavoidable if you're a good guy.
That's true.
And if you try to long rest before it, you automatically, like, fail the good guy route.
Yeah, that's
so
true, too.
Like, the game can drop some difficult stuff on you just out of nowhere.
It's the balance in that game is very strange, but not bad. It's just, it's unique. It's very interesting.
It's unique. We're kind of, like, too strong now because we keep doing everything, and the game doesn't expect you to do everything.
Yeah.
So now we're, like, really strong.
I mean, to be fair, this is the other Larian game I've played that we've all played in the past is Divinity 2. And there's a lot of, like, you can definitely see the DNA there between the two games. And that's pretty much how it was in Divinity 2 as well, where you could do everything, but if you did, you're just going to blow through Acts 3 and 4 because you are going to be so overleveled that nothing is hard.
It's the right way to make the game. Like, this is a game where you probably want to play multiple times. Having to do everything to keep up would be so fucking mind-numbing.
Yes. That would
not
be crazy.
Be able to do it.
You thought I was out!
Oh!
You thought I wasn't going to make it.
Who's that in the rafters?
You thought I wasn't going to make it to Podcast Slam. You thought I was dead. Well, let me tell you something. I will never lose a podcast again.
Brother.
I love the concept of losing a podcast. Like, you get halfway through recording and you fail out like it's Guitar Hero and there's a meter going up and down depending on how funny you are.
Oh,
you thought you could
meter.
Stop me? You thought you could sabotage my victory? You put poison in my dinner and made me sleep till 3 p.m. But
I don't remember doing that.
Here. I saved the Constitution roll. I made the dice check, and I woke up, and I said, yo, you can't keep me off this podcast.
I woke up, and I said, my blood is telling me to kill you, Isabel Thorne.
My blood is telling me to get on the podcast
so,
and rip out a new one for putting poison in my bud.
So introducing Wayne, who is playing perhaps the extra special wrench thrown into our multiplayer campaign because
pleasure to
Wayne,
meet you. I'm the Dark Urge.
Yeah, Wayne has picked the Dark Urge origin, which
Hello,
is
I'm the Dark Urge,
which is the special custom murder hobo storyline origin.
Whereas everybody else is trying to be nice.
Yeah, so like
you know,
You can have to create a character. You can also pick origins of, like, your companion characters and have them be, like, the storyline that you go through. You can also pick the Dark Urge, which is a create a character, customizable character that has, like, completely unique scenes based around the fact that he wants to kill everybody and, like, just be an avatar of slaughter.
He has a dark secret compulsion. He has no memories when he wakes up at the start of the game. And your character has a dark secret compulsion where your blood is telling you to kill. And I guess I won't go too deep into it, but minor spoilers for the Dark Urge if you want to play as that
We're already
origin
talking
character.
Spoilers, yeah.
We already warned.
Well, when you play as the Dark Urge, you get some basic stuff. Like you get off the Nautiloid, and like you see a dead body, and you get some narration where it's like, you see this dead corpse and you fucking love it. And then a companion shows up, and you have to help him. You have to help him get out of a portal, and his hand is there. And you're like, your narration is like, you see the fleshy hand and you think, wow, I'd love to fuck that up. And then your options are like, cut the hand off, fantasize about what you might do to the hand, or resist. And I picked fantasize, and the screen fades to like black red, and then it describes your fantasy, and then you cut back and it's like, oh, it wasn't a fantasy. You fucking did it. And now I just have that party member's hand in my inventory for the entire game, and I'm hoping we meet him in Act 3.
Yeah, we do not have that party member.
Yeah, well, yeah. That I was about to bring up is that we don't have any party members anymore, because so our multiplayer session just got into Act 3, and at a certain point in Act 2, there was a sort of a altercation with needing to kill an NPC because an evil butler told Wayne that he had to do it. And yeah,
there's a fell butler.
There was a place where I was like, oh man, should I have picked this? And the moment I knew that it was absolutely imperative that I played as the Dark Urge was like 10 hours in, where we go to bed. And I'm awoken by a Dark Urge cutscene where the Dark Urge butler arrives, which if you're an RTVS fan and you've watched some of our streams, you probably know about
butlers.
Yeah, we find those very funny. And we find our friend Moopy very funny. And I woke up in the middle of the night, and this fucking like hell goblin named Solaritus Fell wakes up, and he's like, oh, hello, my fine fucking vile master, would you like to fuck a corpse today? Like,
he does actually literally suggest that. He does,
yeah, like
literally suggest that. It's not an exaggeration.
Like, he rewards you for killing another party member, which there's a party member who shows up to your camp on a delay, who in the Dark Urge run, she shows up and you just lose access to her instantly. You just kill her.
And everybody gets really sad and upset.
I failed the checks to hide her corpse. Yep. So I just left her there and went back to sleep. And like, so you just wake up and there's a corpse surrounded in like a blood sigil that I have to show to everyone. And I'm like, I don't know. And I convince everyone to stay.
They were
but I
so,
won't do it again.
They were so upset, but they never took the time to clean it up.
No, that blood sigil is still there.
Well, they removed the body, but the blood sigil was like burned into the ground. And then in Act 2, the goblin, my fell vile Sir Butler, tells me to kill a character that if you kill it, pretty much removes the like friendly village from Act 2
character
from the
game. Where if she gets kidnapped, everybody in town dies. The butler asks you to kill her.
Yes.
So we were holding off on that.
Yeah, and I was like, I wanted to do it, but I was waiting till like the absolute last moment. And actually, I checked. There is like, if we somehow prevented that final Dark Urge Butler cutscene from happening, there is a moment where the town is like Isabel, and then like four people instead of like everyone, and it's like randos that you don't care about. So there actually would have been an opportunity to do it with like the least amount of consequence. But we put it off too long, and the butler shows up, and he's like, you were supposed to do a vile, unspeakable act, but you didn't. And then he does something that I think is like cool in a game design. He asks you to kill your most beloved party member, which I imagine it detects by just like who you've talked
to. Normally that would be a pretty big decision. You know, it's like, oh, because like, you know, normally the party member you have the most rapport with in a single-player playthrough is probably one that you're actually using for combat and checks and stuff, so that's, like, a big deal. However, in a multiplayer scenario where we're the four party members, we kind of just treat all of the extra characters like they're just funny people that stand around in our camp for no reason because they're completely irrelevant.
They're just our weird sort of friends. And like some of them you like you can do like a fraction of their side quests and it's weird. I sort of wish that they handled it a little bit better. I feel like you should be able to take one NPC in a four-player multiplayer like into the world to at least do their quests.
Yeah, it's just funny. Like some of their stuff will progress and like things like big things will happen without them ever being around. So like it's like Shadowheart killed Lazelle, but Lazelle didn't die.
Yeah, it was very strange. I think that was just a bug.
Yeah, the and then there's like characters. There's a character who like I need to meet Asterion. Can you please bring him here? And then I go back to Gambit. I like can't even tell him about it.
Nope.
And like the other thing that'll happen is like a big event will happen, and you'll go back and talk to the NPCs in camp, and they're like, "Why won't you let me come with you and see these crazy things?" And you're like, "You need to stay in camp a little longer."
Yeah, we finished one of the big encounters in Act 2, and then we like walk out of the area, and Shadowheart is there and mad at us for not letting her come.
You've ruined my life. I need to leave now.
Yeah, like, and she leaves the party.
Which was actually her smartest plot ever, because she leaves the party. Then, like, the next long rest that we do after that...
Which is, like, immediate. Literally the next thing we did.
The next thing we did is what Wayne is describing, where he had to kill one of the remaining party members, which he did.
And
nobody's happy about that. So then the rest of them try to fight us. We haven't been using them all game. They're all level 1. We're, like, level 9. We just walk over and hit them twice, and they die. So... Shadowheart got out easy. She got to live because she decided to fuck off.
Shadowheart took the out. It was the way it went down was like the butler is like, "You must kill your beloved, your best friend, and I help you do it willingly to show a goodwill to your father." And my beloved, it was Asterion because he was the first party member we got, and I was like, and at the beginning of the game, I mean throughout the entire game, I was just like this like. Awful, like, uncircumcised, naked little gnome running around.
That's
and I
something
was like,
else we haven't mentioned.
Yeah, you guys gotta bring that up, that you could just be kicked out.
If
the
you
whole
don't
time.
Know about that, that's gotta be real confusing. Why is he uncircumcised?
Well, he's uncircumcised because you can see it. Is there.
For the first like 20 hours he was dick out everywhere, and then eventually I had to wear clothes because I needed like buffs. But at camp he takes it out. He takes it out at camp, and everyone loves it. And, like, so we brought Asterion. He brought Asterion in first. And, like, one of the first interactions I had was, like, "How about we have some sex?" And he was like, "Okay, but not now." And then, later, I proposed it again, and he was like, "I have standards." And then he just fucked Trog for no reason.
And then and then after that, my character just stopped talking to him entirely.
Yeah, Trog's character got the ick and like completely left Asterion alone. And then I had to kill him because he was my beloved. And when you kill him, the options are like sob over the corpse, giggle to yourself. I actually went back last night and checked. I thought that maybe sobbing over the corpse would affect the way the mourning goes, but no, either way, it says you were laughing. So you kill your beloved, and then Lazelle and Karlach run up and they're like, "What the fuck is wrong with you? You're an agent of chaos and we have to kill you." And then your dialogue options are, two is "come to admire my handiwork." Another one is like, "The fool slipped and fell on my knife." Whoops.
Yeah.
which is the one I ended up picking, because the other one, there's a deception check that says the absolute took over his mind and he tried to kill me and I had to kill him in self-defense, and it's a DC 30.
Yeah, you gotta be
like
30.
Which is basically you gotta roll a 20, essentially. You have to max.
So I loaded the save last night, and it actually was possible. If I had all of your guys' buffs from that, which was like advantage from Eagles, some bard thing or a druid thing, bardic inspiration for a 1d8 extra roll, guidance from Gurr, literally a buff from all of you, and then like some potion of mine, I could do it with a 15. potentially, because you could roll plus 15, or you needed to crit. And if you do it, they're just like, that's so scary, and then they stay. And then after that, you can just turn into your Slayer form and kill them, and they don't even react. It's weird.
Yeah.
They literally let you kill them after that. It's so bizarre.
What? They don't fight back?
No, yeah, they don't. They just go, why'd you do that when you're like the demon from hell slapping them and you just kill them?
Whenever they're your companions, like, they don't want to instantly fight you over friendly fire.
Because friendly fire happens.
They survive like two hits max. Right.
Yeah. And you can still revive them in that scenario. But yeah, I told them he tripped on the knife and they attack me and they're all level one because they've never entered my party. So we just like massacre them.
And now we have two druids and a zombie. And those are our friends.
Those are our only friends in this world. And who knows how long that's going to last for.
We would have had a priest and an angel, but unfortunately, we were forced into the maybe the biggest problem that we have with the game yet is that Isabel character that my butler told me to murder. I didn't want to kill her because I didn't want to wipe out the village, but I did go up to her and interact with her to like see the dark urge dialogue. But I wasn't going to kill her, so I went up to her and said, "My blood tells me to kill you." And she's like, "You're not going to kill me." And then I clicked retreat into my dark fantasy. And the narrator's like, "As soon as you had the first thought, it was over." And then she like aggroes on me. And I went invisible and I ran away. And it was fine as long as I never went upstairs in the house she was in. And it was totally fine. But after you save her, you save her fate, you save the entire country, and you like essentially free her from like 200 years of like this curse that she's in. You get a cutscene where she's like, "Thank you. How can I repay you for saving me and returning me to my long lost love?" And the cutscene ends and she's like, "Oh fuck, the dark urge," and tries to kill you. Yeah. And everyone else there gets angry. And she's like a party member. And we had just beaten the final boss of the act and we had to reload and do it again. And then I had to run away. We had to warp the dark urge to like a mausoleum somewhere.
Yes.
Like so that everyone else could have like the end happy cutscene.
Yeah, we have to kindle our dark urge.
She does that and she's like, "Oh, can I come to your camp?" And like they would become party members or just like camp members. I don't know. But we had to be like, no, don't do that because you'll see the dark urge again.
And then she's like, "Please." And you have to say, I really don't want you to.
You're not welcome. Yeah. And then her and her lover are like, "Let's go fuck in the hills outside."
So I feel like this is a pretty good segue into, I think it's safe to say we all really, really like the game. We're like, it's great. Game of the year contender for sure. But this is a good segue into just a few like minor gripes that I think they're definitely gripes, but also they're kind of funny. The crime system in the game is so terrible. It is so bad. Every guard has like Skyrim level psychic connection with every other guard. It's the kind of game where if you pick up an app, like if you just click on an apple on a table that belongs to somebody else, somebody will run up to you, tell you it's time to go to jail. And if you say no, you have to kill them. Like there is no other option. It's like you are either going to jail for accidentally picking up an apple or you have to murder the entire town that you're in.
Or
there's no in between. Well, sure, you can pay money or whatever.
You can bribe them, but they usually ask for, like, 2,000 gold.
It's, like, a lot.
Which is, like, two magic item armors worth to just get out of that scenario instead of quick loading.
Yeah. The crime system is ridiculous. It makes no sense.
It's really bad. I'm, like, sort of starting to figure it out. There's a tooltip at one point you get where it's, like, sometimes you might do a crime that no one can see. But they can hear you sometimes, and that is why they're psychic. They're hearing you from across a town.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
And they're also having like perfect memory of every item that they own, and like know that it's not in the spot it's supposed to be. And then they just have a really good hunch to walk to the exact person that took it, and then accuse you of it. My most egregious crime interaction happened at single player. Log, do you remember in the druid camp, there's like a little blue jay with a key in its nest, and you have to like convince it that it like that it doesn't need that, or like scare it away.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, because it happened to me too.
Yeah, I'm playing a barbarian in single player, and I took the option to roar and scare the bird away. And there's a key in its nest, and of course, if you try to take it while the birds are there, it's going to peck at you because it's like, no, that's like part of my nest. That's my decorations. I scare it away. The key is still red. I take this thing out of this random bird's nest, and then just like a human walks up after I take the key, and it's like, that's not yours.
Like, that's the birds.
Yeah,
I mean,
what are you doing stealing for birds?
What the fuck?
If you pick up the key out of the bird's nest while in the sight line of somebody else, they will.
Which you're going to be in sight. They're doing that ritual. You can't move the cone.
Well, no, like, you can pick the key out of the bird's nest while nobody's looking at you. But
for me, the cone was always covering it because of that druid ritual.
Well, there's one person that walks back and forth, and whenever they are walking towards the bird's nest, they are like looking at the key. And if you pick up the key while they are looking in that direction, yeah, they will like act like you're doing something vile. You've taken a key from a bird, but that's the only person that cares.
I can think of one more egregious. The most egregious one that I can think of right off the bat was after the fight that we were talking about with Isabel, where she could potentially just walk into a wall and die.
Oh, yeah!
After you beat the major bad guy in that room, until she decides to talk to you, taking anything off of him counts as stealing.
Yeah.
So if you take anything off of the guy you just killed that tried to murder everybody, that's stealing. Don't touch that.
Yeah, don't touch that dead guy that tried to kidnap me. Like, that belongs to us.
I think in that specific case, it's because he, like, was friendly with them and betrayed them.
Maybe.
Like, that guy came from the village and then, like, came back.
It's still stupid.
You can come up with justifications for some of it. Like, the thing with the bird, it's like, well, it is a town
full of druids,
so they can talk to animals. But I feel like, and this is my theory has been the whole time that coming from Divinity 2, stealing stuff in Divinity 2 was ridiculously overpowered. Like, just from a gameplay perspective, if you had a high thieving skill in Divinity 2, you could rob people blind and come back and shake their hand and they wouldn't care. And it was by far the most efficient way to do anything was to just steal it. So I feel like what they tried to do is reel it back and make it worse to do, but in doing it, it kind of makes it not make a lot of sense. They nerfed it in a weird way.
But it's also not like emphasized either. Like, even if you're a rogue that's specialized into thief or whatever, like, you're not supposed to be like big on pickpocket.
No, you're not supposed to do it.
You just have some versatility.
But you can do it. So in the single player campaign, I was like, okay, I want to like figure out how to pickpocket properly. And there is a way to do it. You need to buff your sleight of hand as high as possible, because the rolls that they want are going to be like to steal a merchant's. I honestly think this DC is maybe a little low for this. To steal a merchant's entire pile of money, just like 1,000 gold. You need like a DC 17. You need to roll like a 17 or higher. So like buff their sleight of hand however you can. Like in my single player, I have a Starion who has like a million sleight of hand buffs, and then I have like a +1 on a glove, and then I have him take guidance. I think the only way you can reliably pickpocket is with invisibility, where you can literally just not be visible while you do it, and then like you can immediately go and move out of sight somewhere. Make sure that they roll for the thing. Like, so I, you know that there's like a merchant in the goblin camp. I had Asterion steal all of her gold and a special great axe she had. And then what you need to do is you need to go hide them in a weird spot. If they're actually stealthed, like, so the way hiding works in this game, whether it's invisibility or actual stealth, is like NPCs will remember where your character is wherever you pressed the hide button. So you need to go find a spot that's like out of cone's vision, out of all vision cones, hide, and then maneuver to a weird spot that they can't get to easily. And then just wait. The guards will not find you psychically if you do that. They won't run up to you. They'll run up to your friends, but your friends, they'll be like, are you a criminal? And you just say no, and they're like, you seem very innocent, and nothing happens. And, like, as long as you wait, you like, just, a couple minutes...
Couldn't you just warp your Asterion to camp every time you did it?
I guess so, but I feel like I wanted him to hide, like, there... And, like, really make sure that he could exist in that area without them reaccusing him. And they didn't. I don't know if warping to camp would be like, oh, he clearly left. Like, I don't know. That's the way that I've gotten it to work, is, like, hide your thief in a weird spot and wait a little while. And then you're fine. Of course, if you fail the dice check, they just attack you.
Yeah. But that's what quick save, quick load is for.
Yeah, yeah. In Divinity, the way it worked is, like, if your thieving was good enough, you could just, like, steal a set amount of stuff.
It was based off of the money value. Yes.
It always worked. And yeah, so you pretty much never needed to spend money. You just needed one party member with a really good thieving skill. And, like, literally, you would always do that. Like, you would never buy shit from people.
It was stupid to buy anything.
I feel like the best description I've come up with for Baldur's Gate 3 to try to sell it to people, or just in general, is it's like playing D&D with a really, really railroady DM, right? For better or worse. Because if you go along with the story and you do the things the game wants you to do, it's great. It's awesome. It's a great experience. The combat is super fun. I don't even like 5e combat that much, but I'm still having fun in these encounters, like just doing fun stuff. But as soon as you go off the beaten path and try to do something the game doesn't expect, things get fucking messed up and weird.
I wanna be devil's advocate a little bit here, because I was complaining about that at the same time. At the same time, there is a huge amount of room for variety and approaches to situations. The game accounts for a ridiculously deep amount of ways you could handle scenarios, but it's when you find that one that it didn't.
Exactly.
That's when it gets fucked up.
And when I say railroad, that's what I mean, where it's like, if you're doing something the game expects, A-OK. And the game expects a lot, so it's not that bad.
It's like a very railroady, but like the best DM ever at the same time. Like it's like someone who like made this insane, incredible campaign and came up with like 30 different ways for you to do or interact with anyone. But they also don't like it when you steal. Yeah, there's that. Well, I mean, like I said, I figured it out. It's just the game doesn't. The game should have like a stealing tutorial, honestly, to be like, hey, here's how you should do this if you want to do it, because it's weird and not like the other games, and also just not like D&D. It's like its own thing there. This game's fucking amazing, and the variety of ways encounters can go. It almost pisses me off how good it is, because this game is stupid long. It's like,
oh yeah, it's ridiculous.
We are like almost like 45 hours into our playthrough, and we've just barely breached the surface of the third act of the game, which is potentially the halfway point. We think it's the halfway point. It's a very fucking long game, but it's also a game that I want to play like three times, because there's so many different ways you could do things. There's so many different interactions that change based on decisions you've made, or like stats you have, or classes you've picked. In our playthrough, we didn't go through the courtyard of the goblin camp. You can like talk your way in there and just like hang out and like interact with all the different goblins. And there's a lot of different things you can do. I'm playing a barbarian in single player. I was playing late last night. One of the reasons why I slept in today. And I went to the goblin that was guarding the gate. And, like, you know, you could use your Illithid Tadpole and, like, tell him, like, you need to let me in. And he'll be like, oh, okay. You could befriend him by talking about his pet, his warg, like showing him that you know things. And then he'll have you do a goblin ritual to get in. I did that. And I told him, like, oh, yeah, you're nice. Your warg's coat is very shiny. And then you, like, name the species. And the goblin's like, how'd you know? Well, you could come in, but you got to wear our war colors, which means put shit on your face. And because I was a barbarian, I just said, you eat shit now. And he's like, oh, okay. And then I just made the goblin eat shit. And then he let me in. Like, there's just this extended animation of him on the ground eating shit. And he's like, there, it's gone. I did it.
Yeah.
And then he's like, you can go in now.
The level of like dialogue tree in this game is, it's like maybe the, I mean, I haven't played a whole lot of games like this, so maybe I'm talking out of my ass, but it feels like it has an amount of depth that I've never seen in a game before. Like, the amount of different choices and the way that it affects different NPCs.
I think Baldur's Gate 3 is a revolutionary RPG. I think this is, new...
I think we aren't even in a position to, like, know how far it goes. Apparently, if you pick, like drow or half elf drow, a lot of dialogue changes whenever you're in act one.
That makes sense.
Yeah, because you're a race that is like
generally disliked
to the absolute.
Yeah,
you're generally disliked, and also you are one of the races that is being taken over, like, by the villain in the game. Like, the other thing, I wonder what playing as a githyanki is like.
I'm sure that's very different as well.
Yeah, I'm this game is so fucking long, and I want to play through it like 6 times. Like, it's like horrible.
But
I
do think
it
gets faster on every playthrough, because eventually you just kind of get the feel of like what you can
some dialogue
avoid,
yeah,
and like what you've seen before. And also I feel like the fun part of these Larian games is also figuring out what the really cheap shit is and abusing it, like, in future playthroughs, like, using your... Because it's like, oh, okay, well, I know that in this fight, this person's going to be standing right here, so if I position my units over here, I already, like, can get them, and, you know, it's fun to go in with, like, a new game plus sort of mindset.
Yeah, I've been having a ton of fun in single player.
Listeners, if you want a little trick, a little gamer hint, as of this podcast, Tavern Brawler, the feat, is super fucked up right now, specifically whenever it interacts with thrown items, and it just caused them to do way too much damage, and it also caused them to do damage that just pierces all, like, passives and resistances and stuff. So, like, nice. if you run into a door that has, like, a high health total, and it says, like, oh, only damage over 20 can apply to this door, just throw a dagger at it over and over. It will do a flat amount of damage each time, and you will eventually bust the door down.
Yeah, it's fucked up.
That is definitely... That brings me to another just funny... I won't exactly call it a gripe, but just a funny thing. I almost said Path of Exile. I have too many video games in my brain right now. I'm sorry. Baldur's Gate 3 is...
Bummer, cyberpunk.
Yeah. Baldur's Gate 3 is a good example of how a game can be ridiculously buggy, but still very fun to play, because the game has a lot of bugs just because it is so vast and expansive that you're going to run into bugs. But that being said, we haven't run into too many that have been totally game-ruining.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, nothing causes a crash, which is impressive.
We just got somebody stuck in a door.
There's been people stuck, NPCs stuck in doors, weird pieces of geometry literally flying back and forth through the air, making a ton of noise. Like,
oh, yeah.
There's a lot of visual-related bugs that are very funny.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, to be honest, one of the most minor but most frustrating bugs, logs a druid. But I'm the host of our lobby, so a lot of the times when, like, a cutscene happens automatically, it puts the Dark Urge as the focus. But Log is a druid who is almost always in his owlbear form, before the cutscene begins, and the way it positions him, because he's, like, the second or whatever slot player he is, he will always be in a position where his fucking bear is clipping through my little gnome. And when the camera goes to a certain angle, it'll, like, show the villain talking, and you just see the inside of the owlbear's face, and you don't get to see any of the animation, which pisses me off, because the animation in this game is stellar. Like, the facial... This game is really a marvel in both, like, the raw amount of dialogue and, like, cinematic shit it has, and also, like, it looks great. Like the characters all look great. The facial animation, honestly, I feel like is... For a game with so much dialogue, I feel like the facial animation is, like, way too good. It's, like, weird. Like, I wonder if, like, How do you think they did that? How do you think you do, like, high-quality facial animation like that for an entire game? Because you think of, like, Bethesda games, and it's all automated. Like, that's, like, yeah, I mean, is it automated here, too?
They mo-capped it, for sure.
Oh, I guess so.
Yeah, it's literally mo-capped.
Damn, mo-cap's good now.
They had a patch recently that said they improved the mo-cap on a character.
Ah. Yeah, it's a fucking fantastic game.
Yeah, I've learned to appreciate how detailed the owlbear model is. It looks really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it's a great looking game.
The game looks really good. It runs a little shaky on older hardware. Like, I have a 1080, which
I'm finding that it has to, like, part of it is tied to the renderer. The Vulkan renderer seems to be better.
You think that's better? Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll try switching to that, because I was using the DirectX one. And it was...
It depends on your
things
GPU,
get
from what
really
I know.
Really laggy. Like, in the towns, like, specifically, we get into Act 3, and you're instantly put into this, like, town with a bunch of buildings and a circus and a whole ton of NPCs. It's like, if I don't position my camera in the right way, I'm getting 3 FPS. Like, it gets really
Damn,
bad,
that bad
for me. Yeah, it gets really bad. I think it's just, once you load enough areas, the game just... kind of like caps out. Like, I don't know, it very well could be that I have a 1080, it just doesn't have a lot of VRAM.
Well, I've also noticed a behavior, and I don't know if the Vulkan renderer fixes this. I've noticed a behavior where if I load like more than one full zone without restarting the game, like something about it just breaks and it starts really struggling to render new things. Like, I don't know what the behavior is like under the hood, but it's a pretty consistent behavior. Is if I'm like in the Underdark in single player, and then I go to the overworld in Act 1 in single player, and then I leave and join directly into our multiplayer game in Act 2 or whatever, once I load into Act 2, that shit is unplayable, and I need to restart.
Yep. There's a few things that could certainly be ironed out, but the game itself is still... Super
it's just
solid.
So ambitious. It's like, it is, I think if you have a passing interest in RPGs or like D&D stuff, like if you think like the like typical D&D fantasy, like killing some goblins with magic and turning into bears and stuff is cool, you need to check this game out. Like, even if like the strategy, like sort of turn-based gameplay doesn't necessarily like seem like something you'd like, you should try this game. Divinity 2, like Larian is the dev. They made the Divinity series 1 and 2. I never played Divinity 1, but to be honest, I can't even remember what had me play Divinity 2. I think, like, one of y'all must have asked me to play. Because, like, these are not the sort of games... These are not, like CRPGs were not a genre that I even, like, knew about. I don't know what brought me to try it. One of you must have compared it to D&D or something.
You know what's weird? I can't remember why I started playing Divinity 2 either.
I bought the game because it was on sale. I was like, oh, I'll give this a shot. Maybe I recommended it to you guys.
We definitely, like, my first playthrough was absolutely a four-player multiplayer. I've never played that game single player.
Yeah, me either.
And, like, I don't remember why, but it was really, really fun. And I loved it. I always call Divinity 2 my favorite game I've never beaten.
Yeah,
because I've never.
It's a long one too, for sure.
And I think, to be honest, I was thinking about this with Baldur's Gate 3. I think Baldur's Gate 3 is worth playing even if you don't beat it. I think, like, if you don't really have the time to go through this entire game, I think you're still going to have like an impactful and really fun experience just playing through like maybe the first act or two.
I mentioned it earlier, based on the achievement stats, only 17% of all people have beaten Act 1. I think a good 5% of people have beaten Act 2. I think 5% of all players have beaten Act 2.
The achievement for reaching Baldur's Gate's at 11% now. It's gone up.
Okay.
But that's still very small.
But still, that's crazy because, I mean, the fact that, like, 70% of people haven't gotten past the first area and, like, probably just due to the amount of shit there is to do there, you know?
Yeah.
Like, we can kind of go a little faster as a four-player people because number one, I don't know, you don't have to talk to the party members as much, right? So like that's a lot of time where you are not interacting with an NPC and listening to them talk. So I feel like we can kind of get through the game a little faster as a party of four than single player.
Yeah. And we can also talk to multiple NPCs at the same time.
You're like progressing multiple things and looting multiple corpses at the same time.
Yeah.
That's the bigger thing. I really wish that you were able to tell your AI characters in single player to just like loot a place. I wish your party members had some semblance of automatic control and you didn't have to do all of it. It's like really, after playing through most of the game is with four players, it's really annoying to have to like just have one person slowly comb over loot. Like, I wish there was a little bit more automation there, but.
Well, here's something that I think is cool is that they are working on adding mod support, which will be great because Larian is like super, super pro modding scene. Divinity 2, there are, like, people made mods for Divinity 2, right? And Larian basically looked at, they, like, look over the mods and they say, like, okay, these are so good that we wish we would have done them. If you use them, we won't, like, disable achievements and stuff. Like, they're basically, like, first-party mods for the game that other people made that Larian is like, this is, like, something that we would implement if we had the time, but we don't have the time. So we're just going to say that this is a officially supported mod. So I assume they'll do something similar with Baldur's Gate 3 when that modding comes out. So I'm looking forward to the modding scene for that game.
The
I think it will be quite fun.
Modding scene's not even official right now, and there's still a lot coming out.
Yeah.
I have an odd recommendation, actually. I was saying earlier, like, if you have a passing interest in RPGs or a passing interest in, like, fantasy, like, D&D type stuff, you should check this out. You should play this game if you like Fallout New Vegas. That is my weird recommendation. Some of the interactions you have with characters in this game, like in dialogue reflected on like your D&D stats. Like, I haven't had this much fun with dialogue trees since New Vegas. I think this is like the first game I've played that's like topped the way dialogue trees work with your skills in New Vegas. This is the first game where I'm like, oh, this is like better than that.
You know what?
I love this.
That reminds me of something. At first, like within the first couple days of Baldur's Gate coming out, I was like, man, when I finally get to Starfield next month, it's gonna feel real shit compared to this in terms of like dialogue and everything. But the more I think about it, it's like it's such a different thing altogether. It won't matter. It's a totally different beast.
Personally, I would be like hawing and hemming like the entire time. Dialogue trees are gonna be so boring compared to this. I think it is comparable.
Then you're never gonna be able to play another RPG again.
Well, I mean, yeah, actually.
there are game franchises that just ruin genres for you. I can't play any game like Monster Hunter ever again. Like, I have to play Monster Hunter. Like, they just do it so much better that every other game that tries to copy Monster Hunter just feels like shit in comparison. Like, there are straight-up games that just ruin genres. It exists. You're always going to be comparing it.
I'm being extra harsh on Starfield because I'm, like, negative excited for that game.
But, I'm hoping that it's fun. I don't care if it's good or bad. I just want it to be fun.
I mean, I feel like the space stuff might be fun. Like, the ship stuff will probably be fun. I can't imagine the dialogue trees being anything notable.
I don't know. I'm not holding my breath for the dialogue. It's Bethesda. I've never had any hope for Bethesda's dialogue. But, I mean, on paper, it's like the game I've been wanting for years. So, we'll see.
Yeah.
Well, we Scorpion
got his game he wanted.
We started off this podcast saying that this was the summer of gamers. This was our special gaming episode. And by God, we did talk about Baldur's Gate for like 60 minutes straight.
Yeah,
so
now you guys were talking about Baldur's Gate for like 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Bob hasn't even really played it yet.
Oh my God.
The other ones.
Yeah. This is going to be a 10-hour podcast. So.
I think have you guys even played some of the other games? I think which ones?
I mean,
like three different things came out yesterday.
Yeah, yeah. It was huge.
Yeah, let me talk about mine. Yesterday was Friday, August the 18th. Bomb Rush Cyberpunk came out. Kind of out of nowhere. I didn't even notice it was coming out until this week. What did you say?
I tried to sing a little, like, just can't get enough.
Oh, yeah.
But my voice died because I literally woke up and came on this podcast.
Gotcha. So, Yeah, so for the uninitiated, Bomber Cyberfunk is very much a homage to Jet Set Radio Future. I say Future over original Jet Set Radio because
are the controls
one like yeah one like the aesthetic is more futuristic, and two the game is like playable actually, so it's much more like Future than Jet Set Radio. So yeah, I dug into that. I played a couple hours of it yesterday. And so I think right off the bat, it's a way more story focused game than the Jet Set Radios. And that's not really saying much because Jet Set Radio sort of was just kind of like a goofy little thing. But like Bomber Cyberfunk, immediately there's like some, there's like a stake that has been set like right off the bat. Like you have an opening sequence where you're breaking out of a prison or whatever. And yeah, like you get into the game and it's like, oh, you can do like Tony Hawk shit. You can get on and off your skates, or you can use a skateboard, or you can use a bicycle. And then like you can do, you know, your typical Jet Set Radio tricks, and like the combo system is pretty straightforward. Like you can do like grinds and air tricks and stuff like that, and you can enhance, like you can like enhance the multiplayer, the multipliers on your combos by doing like specific inputs on like a curve in the rail, or doing like a wall ride or something like that. And like honestly, it's a lot of like Tony Hawk, like Tony Hawk's Underground era type stuff, because you can like also you can land and do like a manual to extend your combo meter, like and prevent your combo from dropping and stuff like that. The graffiti is cool because you don't have to set which ones you use. You have access to each one at all times, and you just do a different input based on whichever one you want. So that's like a fun little thing for variety whenever you're posting up your pictures. The soundtrack is really good. The one criticism I have is that it kind of feels too modern, because I'm so used to Jet Set Radio Future. Whenever you think about it, those soundtracks were modern whenever they came out, but they came out in like the year 2000. So like, I'm expecting to hear like a little bit of ska in the soundtrack, you know?
Uh-huh.
Like, I'm expecting to hear like some weird song like Aisle 10, like, "Hello, Allison!" Stuff like that. But this soundtrack is much more like, it's modern, so it's got like, there's like a little bit of like future funk and like just kind of modern I guess stuff that would be in a DJ set, which it's fitting. It's just I just wanted a little bit more like throwback type stuff. But I guess the other thing is that it's kind of weird unlocking extra characters. Like, I haven't unlocked an extra character yet. I have my crew of three characters, and then I have two that are from a DLC, and I don't know. I think they're just characters from Lethal League or something. So, like, I have these five characters I can choose from, and I've had access to these five characters from the start of the game, and I haven't unlocked a new one yet. And I've completed, like, two chapters of the story, basically. I think there's five chapters. And I've found, like, what are obviously unlockable characters out in the field. There, I didn't really like bring it up, but also like there's a lot of exploration in this game. There's like a lot of like little extra pieces of the zones that are not part of like the main area that you just like, you have to like find the little entrances to. And in some places you have to like walk up to like a grandpa dressed up like a b-boy, and he'll say, "You need at least 120 rep to get past me," and then you have to get the rep, and then grandpa says you're okay to go, and then you unlock like a huge new area in this zone that you've already been going
through. More video games need characters that like demand that you need to get past them by getting like some jigsaw like pieces or rep or
like there's always like a grandpa or a grandma just like chilling in front of some speakers. It's like, and back in my day I had 140 rep around here, and then you get 140 rep and they let you through. And like, yeah, so that stuff is like really cool, because like original Jet Set Radio, like that was all like timed levels. You didn't really have access to that kind of stuff. But yeah, like the exploration and just the couple areas I've been to have been, it's been really expansive. But yeah, going back to what I was saying though, is like, I'll just run into like characters that are obviously unlockable characters, and then I'll talk to them and like, they'll say, okay, can you get this graffiti down in this hard to reach spot? And then you do it.
Oh, that's
and
so go, Tony Hawk.
And then you do it, and then you go back to them, and it's like, hey, cool, meet me in this other place that like has a name that isn't mentioned anywhere on your map. You just have to know where to go. And then they disappear, and you have to go to that area. And then you find them again, and they're like, okay, now that you're here, can you beat my score in under 2 minutes or whatever? And so you go there and you beat their score in under 2 minutes. And at that point, you're thinking like, okay, I've done two things. I'll definitely unlock the character, right? And so I did that. And then I talked to them again. It's like, hey, cool, you beat my score. Well, I'll see you around somewhere. And then they leave and you don't unlock them. Well, that's literally what they said. I'll catch up with you later somewhere.
Do you think, is this a kind of game that like, well, like when you beat it, will it want you to play through multiple times? Maybe like, is there like going to be a new game plus kind of system?
I don't
maybe?
Think so. I think that you can just like max out all the stuff in just your one playthrough. I don't because like you can just go back to wherever you want, you know.
I see.
But it's just like it's weird because typically because my thought in like Jet Set Radio is like whenever you unlock a character, you find them the first time and then you like complete their challenge and then you're good. But, yeah, I don't know. They've got some kind of thing going in this game, and I'm, like, kind of confused by it, but, like, it's not really hurting my experience any.
Well, you know, you watch things and information is revealed to you.
Yeah. But anyways, I've been really liking it so far. They have also, like, some trippy visual, like, Mario Sunshine-type zones in between chapters that are pretty cool. I'm looking forward to where this game goes.
Oh, nice. Well, there's the review.
There you have it.
Who wants to talk about Texas Chainsaw Massacre?
I was about to say, or do we want to mention
it's
that?
Good. It's good. It's cool.
A good game. It's a good game. I have played the least. I did not play in the open beta, but I did play. I have the game. I played it last night on Scorby stream with Wayne. It's a fun game. It's a fun game. It's just like, what are you going to say?
It has terrible menus. They need to fix that shit.
Yeah.
And it is way more fun when you're playing with friends. I think that is the thing that the ASIM horror like kind of game needed. The playing the family where each of us is a family member and we're against four victims is like literally that's maybe the only way I want to play that game. I don't know if I want to play that game solo because it's so fun to play with friends. Same. Like we're just like. It is being able to just tell each other where people are like when we need to and like grouping up on them with just even a little bit of communication. And then when we get our prize, when we catch our prey and Balp and I are just like cackling. It's too fun. Like it's so fun.
Just don't get stuck in a car.
Ah, boy. It's just like it's so fun. Like we have a fucking blast just going like Southern style crazy on motherfuckers.
I'm not gonna guess as to what the game is gonna be like long term. Hopefully it sticks around because yeah, it is really fun. But yeah, it is like it's not trying to be Dead by Daylight, but you can't help but make some comparisons. One of the things about Dead by Daylight is when you play killer, even if, like, whether the other team is good or not, sometimes it can just be, like, frustrating. And, like, getting to play with friends on either end, like, while on either team, is, like, it does take the edge off, you know? It makes it really fun. It's also very refreshing because this game has, like, a lot going on, like, for both sides. Like, it is a complicated game. It's not, like, a go here, fix these things, and then open a door and leave. You know, like, there's a lot of, like...
Multiple objectives.
Yeah, there's a lot of objectives. There's a lot you can do.
You have to manage the noise you're making.
Yeah, it's a cool game. I like it. It's fun. And it is, like, very much a love letter to the movie. So, it's, like, Scorpy's favorite
game. Down to, like, the props. Like, there's, like, a... when you start one of the matches, one of the maps has like a shot of like the road in front of the house, and it shows what is supposed to be a dead armadillo that's clearly just a toy, which is exactly like it is in the movie.
I mean, when you turn the game on.
Yeah, the intro to the game is like a recreation of the intro to the movie, like down to the like quality of the text you're seeing and like the voice. It's really good. They've managed for the killer side is really fun. And they've managed for the victim side of things. I still do not love this sort of thing in both Dead by Daylight and this game, but they've managed to make filling a meter, holding a button and filling a meter, more engaging than Dead by Daylight's stupid bullshit. Like, I got into Dead by Daylight on the killer side of things, but I was always, like, never really a fan of playing as a survivor. And, like, whenever I first gave the game a try, like, many, many years ago, like 2017, I hated it because I played as the survivor and it was like, oh, this is a game where you walk around and find a box and then you hold a box and you fill a meter and then you do that five times. And I hated that. I thought the skill checks and the generator repairs was like the most boring gameplay loop you could fucking fathom. And in Texas Chainsaw, they make that more interesting by like there are a lot of meters you have to fill, but you have to do that. You have control over how you do it, and you have to do it strategically. Like, you can very carefully just like press the button in like a rhythm and then pause, press the button in a rhythm, and you'll get your thing safely. But if you like fuck up or like need to get your thing really fast, you can fill the meters like six times as fast, but you tell every killer where you are when like you do that. Like you can like rummage through a box to find what you need really quickly, but you're like pushing shit all over the place and like clanging metal, and like the family will know where you are.
The game is like more realistic in that sense, like visibility matters. And like sound cues matter. Like, it's definitely like, you know, in a game that is supposed to be like horror, but then like you have this weird competitive like PvP element, and like it makes it kind of, it does it a lot better than other games of this genre, of this like subgenre that I've seen. It feels like it actually matters, you know what I mean? Whereas opposed to just like, okay, let me try to hear where they are. It's like, oh, it's like strategic. Like, you play around it. Like, characters will have perks related to it in like an actually meaningful way, and not just like a, oh, this character, you equip this thing and this character, you're less loud. It's like, oh, like there are different things that cause noise on the map. There are chickens in cages, and if you go near the chickens make sound, but like it's both ways. It's like a two-way street.
You kill the chicken.
And it's like a two-way street where like both teams can make the chicken, so it's like an alert for both sides, you know. So it's like it's good, it's interesting.
They've also done an interesting job of like spreading out the importance of the items that you can get as a victim. Where it's like, okay, you could pick up health potions, you could pick up lockpick tools, which is the most important thing. You need that to win, and like that is like. That is also one of the noisiest things you can do, is like search for a lockpick tool, but you have to do it. But then the other thing you can get is like a bone shard, which is like sort of a bet you're taking by taking one of those, that you might need one. Like, with the bone shard, you can stab a killer and like stun them for a while, but you lose the bone shard. You could also use it to kill a chicken that's making noise and alerting you to where you are. You could use it to sabotage lamps, which I've never seen anyone ever do that. I don't know if that, like, I think that might be like a stupid decision to do that one. But like, just the fact that there's a lot of options and like what you can go for is fun.
I'm interested in seeing what this game plays like. I mean, I have fun. So whenever, like, expect to see like us stream the game and play it on stream and whatnot. And we're just going to play it on our own time too. But I'm curious to see what the game looks like, maybe like a few weeks down the road. But it looks cool. It's fun to play, for sure.
I think we should talk about not video games.
Is it my turn for show and tell? Wait, I have one.
Okay.
This is our video game episode. What do you mean talk about video games? You weren't here at the start, but we said this is the Gamer's Summer episode, where we have to talk about video games.
By the way, that skipped all the Baldur's Gate, Wayne's here.
Yeah.
There should be like... What do you call them?
What? an alert?
What's the word for a timestamp? We need timestamps for this one.
Oh, yeah, we probably do need timestamps.
Well, I mean, that's an editing thing.
Yeah. Anyway, I was just going to briefly mention a game that I really like that I played between the last podcast and now, which is called Pseudo Regalia, and it's a fun little...
I played it, too.
It's a fun little 3D platformer. It's short and sweet, and I think the best praise I can give it is it's so good, it made me start making a video game. So
it's good, it's tight, it's designed to be tight, not just in its like gameplay, like the mechanically it's very tight, but it's tight and that it's short. It's only $6 and it's like it's I think it takes you like it's like a what, like 5-6 hour game
depending on how thorough you're being and how it's I don't want to call it an open world game because that's ridiculous, but it's just
it's
like
a Metroidvania.
Yeah, it's a Metroidvania. Like a... So if you wander to the correct areas first, your playthrough will be shorter than if you have to wander around and find what you're supposed to do. But yeah, generally between 3 and 5 hours. But here's the thing. I played it, beat it in a single sitting. I was like, damn. I honestly enjoy a good game that I can beat in a single sitting. I think that's good. That's like a good thing. Like, I don't need every game to be some 20-hour bloated thing.
If every game is Baldur's Gate, well, we're all gonna die.
Exactly. I don't have enough time.
Right.
Sometimes I just want to sit down, play a video game for 3 hours, beat it, and be like, damn, that was fun. Maybe I'll beat it again someday, you know?
Yeah. All right. Lightning round. Just get this shit out of the way. I've been playing Halls of Torment. It's a good game. It's early access. It's cheap right now.
Also cheap. I think also $6.
It's a Vampire Survivors-like. Except
it looks like an old PC CRPG.
Yeah, instead of like going for like the 2D Castlevania aesthetic, it's going for the Diablo aesthetic, which I like a little bit more. It's early access, so the game's not done, but it is very playable. And there's more content down the road because the game's going to be finished.
Visually, it's
point.
So much more enthralling than Vampire Survivors. Yeah. Like, I think even if you prefer like the Castlevania homages, I feel like the thing with Vampire Survivors is, like, yes, it's like mostly a Castlevania thing, but it's also just kind of like, and this is sort of like an appeal for the game too, but Vampire Survivors is very much just like anything. Like, you're playing Vampire Survivors and it's like, okay, you're fighting like milkmen and like robots and aliens, and it's just like, it's just all over the fucking place. But like, in general, that sort of like full retro nostalgia pixel art is like, I can get into it if the game is good, which Vampire Survivors is, but it's not really my thing. I haven't seen a game do what Halls of Torment is doing, which is like recreating the like Diablo era PC RPG look. And it looks great.
They
it
even
looks
have,
great, and
they
it's
even
still
have
fun.
Talking head FMV, like, not FMV.
Yeah, there's like
talking
the game.
Head animations and like
the whole game is it's all pre-rendered. Like they did it the way that it is supposed, like that those games were done, which is like it's like the maps are pre-rendered. They're just like big textures that you're moving over. The enemies sprites, it's pre-rendered 3D sprites. They have talking 3D heads that look
the aesthetics are a little tighter, and the gameplay is also very good.
It's a little short on content, but for the $6 you're getting at least like 20 hours. Yeah, like,
and it's early access and it's very playable, so
maybe 20 is a stretch, but
go check that out. Lightning round, any other games?
Street Fighter 6 is amazing.
Yeah, we like semi talked about that. I guess Evo happened, but there's not much to say about that other than Evo is fucking great.
You should have watched it when I streamed it.
Yeah,
we talk about it on stream enough, and we don't have to talk about
Evo
it.
Evo is awesome. I'm glad that there's a good Street Fighter. Next, what about Gur? What did you bring to show and tell?
Nothing at all.
Oh,
Baldur's Gate.
Well, yeah, that's true. I mean,
that's about it.
That's fair.
You want to talk about real life now?
I don't know. I feel like we're at almost 90 minutes. Like,
I haven't been living real life. I've been living in Faerun.
I've been living in real life.
Yeah, I went out to buy shoes. I haven't done that.
Y'all are fools for leaving Faerun.
We're gonna go from talking about.
I can turn into the Slayer there.
Yeah, we're gonna go from talking about amazing video games to talk about Log buying shoes.
Yeah, like, you know, Charles, you always talk about how like men's clothes, they never have like colorful, like vibrant stuff.
It's true.
Have you noticed this trend for shoes as well? Because I was trying to get some new shoes. And, you know, I needed to get, like, a pair of shoes that I could take into the office, you know. And I found that pretty easy. But I wanted to get some new, you know, like, active lifestyle shoes, you know, running shoes, exercise shoes, whatever yeah. you want to call them. And I have one pair that is my absolute favorite. And it's my favorite because it's got, like, the best color combination that I've ever seen. Because, like, it's at the base, it's black, but it has blue laces. And, like, blue stuff all over it. And then a whole bunch of, like, neon green. So, like, it's just, like, a good color combo. And I'm just looking through the shoe store. I'm looking at all the shoes. And it's like, these are all white shoes. These are all white running shoes. I look at the racks and I say, oh, these shoes are colorful. But they're, like, all one solid color. And then
I think you're just at the wrong store. Because I definitely see colorful running shoes.
Well, I saw, like, some colorful running shoes, but I look at them and it's like, oh, these are all one color. And it looks like they have fake mesh. Like, you know that mesh.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That mesh that has, like the little, like, hole pattern on it, right? I pulled out a shoe and I looked at it, and, like, it looked like it had the mesh pattern with, like, the little holes in it. But I look closer, the holes are fake. Like, those weren't real holes in the pattern. Those were, like, weird circles in the design. So it's
this
like...
This is just another
knockoff shoes.
Hey, this isn't a hole, it's a circle. What are you trying to pull?
These are like running shoes I get out of a gumball machine.
I think buying men's clothes is a depressing... Anytime I go out to buy clothes, I look at the sea of black and gray and brown and white shirts, and I go, this is depressing.
I mean, because it's like, if you want interesting clothes, you have to buy them online.
Yeah, you
like,
cannot go to stores anymore.
Which sucks, because you can't fit. Like, you have to just gamble.
I don't know what Texas is like, but aside from online shopping, the other alternative that you have is, like, thrift shopping, which is why it's so popular. People find, like, older clothes.
Even the thrift stores around here don't, I mean... They don't usually have
We've been
anything.
To their stores around here.
Yeah,
they
we
have
to. We went to.
They have like. We, they have like baby toys and old videos.
Well, yeah. If you're going to like a Goodwill,
we went to that one thrift shop. I don't remember the name of it. I mean, we don't need to name.
I don't remember the name
like,
either.
We went to last year. We went to like a specialized thrift shop. Looking for an outfit for Mr. White, and like
we did find something.
Finding something, yeah, but it was finding something like. But it was only that weird jacket.
Yes,
and the
it was
hat.
Just
that's,
the
that's
super
like,
oversized jacket.
And like the beyond that, there wasn't that much like interesting stuff. It was all like shit. It was kind of bad. Yeah. And it's probably better in an inner city because like you know streetwear is a thing and people are just dressing nicer. Like
I was looking at some. I did some thrift shopping. I didn't buy anything because everything was closing, and it was closing because it was part of a street festival. They closed off like four streets here, in my neck of the woods here in Boston, and it's not like a new thing. It's kind of trendy. A few cities in the Northeast have been doing it. New York started the trend, probably. But now it's in Boston. They've done it before, but in like a rich kid's neighborhood, basically, in a like really posh neighborhood. So it's cool to be able to walk down the street there, but it was already like a rich neighborhood. So like the stalls and the vendors that you would see walking down the road were just kind of like an extension of that. So not as fun. My neighborhood is not as rich, not as posh, and definitely more residential. And so it was a lot of fun, honestly. I went in expecting, like, a fair, like, corn dogs, like, seeing the world's fattest pig. I was expecting that. I was expecting that, because they described it as a festival. It was not that, but I was not disappointed, because when I got there, I walked around for 5 minutes, And it made me think, cars are evil. It made me think cars are evil. Like, it took me 5 minutes before I was like, wow, if cars were not necessary in this country, and every city was laid out like this, it felt so refreshing. Because how I ended up spending the day today was, like, I didn't actually, you know, because it wasn't like a fair, like a state fair or, you know, or a county fair, it just kind of felt like I just did what I would normally have done today, but upgraded. Like, I went down the street, got a hot dog, it was tasty, walked around, go checked out, I did some thrift shopping,
and you can jaywalk anywhere.
And then, I mean, more than that, I was walking down the road. Like, there were like, I saw 10 people smile today, and that is the record for the most people I've seen smile in one day.
Wait, what was the record before?
I'm joking. I'm not keeping track. But I swear to God, I've never seen more people smiling than I have today in one spot here, having lived in Boston for 20 plus years. The fucking, I really hope they do it again. Like, even if they do it, like, once a month or once every few months, it makes it cool. It's, like, cool. Like, for example, all I did today was I went there, walked around, looked at some shops. You know, I just did, you know, I just window shopped, basically. But then I got a hot dog. And then I sat down at a wing place, ate some wings after, you know, had to grab the drink, and then I walked home, and that was it. But just the atmosphere, it made it so cool. Because, like, for example, while, like, the restaurant I went to, the employees were just outside having fun singing karaoke with each other and, like, you know, making wings. And I sat down, ate my wings, and while I was eating wings, like, this couple, like, was like, you know, because seating is limited, they were like, oh, can we sit here? And then we had, like, a nice discussion. It was, like, an older couple. They were probably in, like, their...
Yeah, but did anything funny happen?
Yeah, can you make this story funnier?
Well, while I was eating
wings... I haven't really laughed a lot.
Okay, motherfuckers. Well, while I was eating my wings and talking to this nice couple, a lady across the street was, like, on a unicycle, on a bunch of crates, juggling knives. It was like...
Sick, okay.
Well, that's whimsical, right, but it's not really funny.
No, nothing funny happened, but I don't know, it just gave my otherwise normal day a really cool atmosphere. Like,
so you've never been to a street festival before?
I have, but, like, it's cool because it's not, like... It was in my neighborhood. Like, I literally walked, like, two blocks away. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it made me think... I guess it's one thing if you've been to one, but it's another if it's, like, right outside your house.
Yeah, it's, like, it's really cool because it's, like I said, it's almost as if it, like, upgraded my day. And, like I said, walking around, it made me think, like, if cars didn't need to exist, it could be like this every day. And it would be bitchin'.
But like, then it'd be kidding. Christmas every day. You would get used to it.
But that's cool. Cool.
You say that, but that's like, oh, you don't want to improve your quality of life every day. Like, that's not like, good.
People were walking around.
I was
like
serious.
People were walking around.
I'll fight you.
There's like a camaraderie. People were having fun. Like, people had their dogs out and like were bikes. I would almost compare it to living in Europe because there were kids running around with pizzas. I don't know why, but
you know what you're describing.
It was just like BioShock
pizzas.
Infinite. There were little boys skipping with their baguettes around poles.
They were rolling a hoop with a stick.
Yeah, there was one kid. One kid was so fuck. This is how I know it was a good day and how I knew people were having a good time. There was one kid who was hella smart, and while I was eating wings, they went up to like the employees and was like, you guys want to ride around on my electric scooter? And one person said yeah, and they rode around on their electric scooter, and then they came back and they were like, hey, that was sick, you guys want any free wings or like a soda or anything? And I think they got some free wings out of it. So it's like, I don't know, it was just one of the most merry days I've had in my life. It was fucking sick.
Cool.
See, what you described is life in the state of Maine through like 4 months out of the year.
Yeah, it sounds like you just need to get like in like out of the city.
Yeah.
But no, you can only get that in the city because
what did I just say?
Like I linked a few videos in our Discord. Like there are a lot I like the camaraderie. There are a ton of people walking around. There's a lot of shit.
Yeah, that's
there are people bumping music everywhere. Like
yeah, everybody hates each other in rural areas.
Yeah, what happened?
They
all want to
kill
each other. Actually,
I think that is true.
That's
true.
Yeah.
I think it's more like it depends. It depends on how white you are. No, that's not fair. That's not fair. I respect and admire the rural areas.
Are there
random
DJs? Are there people playing? Is there just a street full of people playing chess? Is there?
No, I don't know. They're probably talking about horses or something.
All right, here.
It is.
I could answer if you give me a chance.
We're not having a new idea here. A walkable city is the most, it's like maybe the best place to live
humans. It's just,
like,
Boston was already a walkable city and they, I don't know, I hope they do this more often. They just closed a bunch of streets down and it felt like a more spread out block party. Like you'd walk down one street and like, this chess club just has a bunch of chess boards on and some tables and people are just playing chess and then like someone's selling hot dogs or like next to them and then you walk down another block and like someone's bumping like music and people are selling tacos. It was dope.
So,
so much fun.
Yeah, you had every set piece from a movie set in New York City all in like one.
Yeah,
area.
Pretty much.
What I was getting at is like through almost the entire summer, every single town in this state, I swear to God, every town that has a population above 1,000 will have a street festival like that. Like exactly what you described, where they'll take like 3 to 5 streets, block them off to all traffic, and then it's just food vendors and people selling their shit and music and shows.
I'm gonna be real. I've also
kind of
lived in small towns, and anytime that something like that happens, it's not nearly as cool as what Valve is describing.
It really depends.
Yeah. Small towns.
You lived
are
in Connecticut, and Connecticut sucks.
Damn, get on
Maine. You're in Maine.
Yeah, I know.
You don't even have a Spoon Shop Brook.
I mean, you don't know that.
We just need good food in Connecticut.
That's all we need.
I'm gonna be the big city life defender here and say that number one. There are probably more than 1,000 people.
Who are you defending?
Attending.
Who's the attacker?
You're
literally saying your life is
I'm
better.
I'm not saying your life is wrong. I'm just saying the situation described was similar to what I had.
Lying. I've lived in lots of small towns that I know.
The other cool thing about it.
All
right,
I imagined
that, like,
what I saw then. All right.
The other cool thing about it was that, like, yeah, it was a lot of people, so there was a lot of camaraderie, but also, like, I was expecting all the booths to just be the local businesses to have like a booth outside their front door. It was the opposite. None of the local businesses had a booth. The booths were all like for other things from other places. But instead, those businesses were just open. So it was kind of cool to like, you know, dip into a CVS, buy like a drink or like, you know, go to a convenience store or whatever, or like sit down at a restaurant, and then you walk back out and it's like a bumpin' street festival. Like they, like all the regular businesses are still open. So it's like, oh, that's kind of like, it made me wish it was like that every day. It made me wish
The two traits of modern utopia. It's a walkable city. And it's also a city without like commerce laws and if we just had a city where people could just, I mean, it's not just that, it's also like people setting up these like DJs and shit and like little street performances without having to worry about like being arrested for it, like that
well,
sort
you
of thing
go to Korea.
Like, you look at fucking like the way it works in Vegas where like street performance or like whatever people want to do outside literally is like limited to a circle that they can't walk out of. I think that's like so fucked up. Like,
yeah,
it's weird.
That's because that shit's so crowded though. It's like nobody can move whatsoever.
Yeah. I don't know. And it's comparing, like, I know you said like no food safety laws or whatever, but it is fucked up how someone who like if you're just like a farmer and you grow, you know, a lot of like good natural food and you want to go and just like, you know, open a cart somewhere and sell it. If you're in a city, you're probably going to get arrested for doing that.
That's called
like
a farmer's market.
Yeah, but
yeah,
like,
we have
the
places
fact that you,
for that.
The fact
they
that it's
host
like restricted.
Those.
I know, but it's still fucked up. It's still fucked up that like people will get arrested for that when like
I mean,
like, you don't have a means to get to a farmer's market. Like you might
but,
not.
But here's
like,
the thing. I mean, I agree. In a perfect world, it would be nice. But the problem is that let's say you have two farmers. You have Farmer Jim, who takes care of his plants and is very studious
and evil,
and he knows all the good. Yeah, we have a Goofus and Gallant situation where you have the Goofus farmer who sprays all of his favorite vegetables with pesticides and then tries to sell it to you. Because in this fictional world, there's no
well,
laws
I think
anymore.
You're taking it too far into the, like, yeah, there's a reason that food safety laws exist. I am talking about a perfect world. We're talking about utopia.
You guys are kind of getting off track talking about farmers markets. I will say that, like, for a lot of places, the halts, like, at least here in the Northeast, I know that, like, a lot of cities are, like, very strict on food trucks because they are afraid of quality reasons. Like, food trucks get, like, very...
You get brain worms otherwise.
Strict. Yeah. But yeah, it was fun. And it kind of made me wish... It, like, this is going to be, like, the nerdiest thing ever. But, like, the two things I would compare it to is, like... It for the first time living in Boston, it felt like I was living somewhere in Europe where, like, you know, you can duck into a shop or a restaurant and then come out and, like, the street is, like, very lively and it's, like, there's commerce even out on the street. It makes it feels cool. It felt cool and also felt like it was like a video gamey in a way because, like, there were more attractions everywhere. You know, like you were just going from like one level to another. It was like a lot was happening.
Well, I'll tell you right now, talking about Baldur's Gate for like an hour is way nerdier than what you just said.
Well, yeah.
Well,
so,
you know what they do? You know what they do in Nashville?
They make hot chicken.
Well, every year in Nashville, they block off a bunch of streets in downtown Nashville, and they use that to hold a fucking street race.
Well, the problem with that is you'd have to be in Tennessee.
Well, no, I'm saying, like, you got all the stuff blocked out, and it's just for a race.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
I don't know. I think that's stupid compared to what you were talking about. Like, I'm thinking about it as, like, man, if I had to go to downtown Nashville, and I knew that they were going to be blocking off streets to have a fucking... race instead of like some cool thing where I can go to a bunch of attractions, I would just be hating my existence.
It depends on how they block it off, because if they block it off and like you're not like no one is allowed, that would be lame.
Yeah, nobody's allowed in the blocked off race course. No,
but like if there was some layout where like they could have the race, but you could also just, like, sit in a restaurant and be eating a meal and then, like, see the cars go by. That would be awesome. You'd probably have to go to Monaco for that.
Hey.
Hey, how's it going?
How about we read some emails?
Wait.
We're in, like, an hour and 40 minutes into this podcast.
I saw a guy at Target who had a shirt that just had the word porn on it.
That was awesome.
Anyway, that's all I have to add to this.
Did you approach him and talk to him?
No, it was actually, I'll give it a little bit of context because it's even weirder than just a guy who just had the word porn on his shirt. There were two guys that were there together and one had the word porn on his shirt and the other had the word cigar on his shirt. And I believe they were two parts of the same, you know, outfit kind of thing where they it was supposed to say the term cigar porn, but I don't know why.
I don't know what the fuck you're trying to.
I looked it up and it's a brand. There is a brand of clothing called cigar porn.
Yeah.
And
what?
Yes, look it up. Look up cigar porn and scroll past the first seven or eight entries in the Google search to get to the clothing. And you will see they sell a shirt that just says porn on it, and they sell a shirt that says cigar, and you buy them together, and you stand next to each other, and then people know how much you like to smoke on those stogies.
And watch porn.
The clothing line instantly turned you and one of your friends into the brother's cock.
It really, like, I... They probably think that's cool, and to me, I would just look at that, and I would only think of that horrible, horrible, horrible Marlboro Reds blog on Tumblr.
In the front group, are you the guy hopelessly addicted to tobacco, or are you the gooner? Which one are you?
Like, if you're wearing those shirts, like, you and your destined brethren act as, like, the crystal chalice for each other. Like, if you step out of range of each other, you're afflicted by the miasma.
Yeah, you have to have both.
Well, no, it's just a guy with a shirt that just says cigar, yeah, that's just, like, say, kind of funny. A guy with a shirt that just says porn, if I see him on his own, yeah, I'm gonna think he's a proud gooner, and I'm gonna feel weird about him. Like,
that guy has no drops of myrrh.
I just can't imagine. I never knew how deep the well ran for love of cigars. I didn't realize that we were making entire clothing brands based off of it now.
There's that fucking cigar store near us that is like popping off every day.
It's true. Like, it's true.
It's insane. The way people get into cigars is like, it's a cult.
I think it appeals to like a specific type of guy where, like, you know,
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
You know, like midlife crisis. Midlife crisis, you gotta get obsessed with something. Oh, cigars are manly and cool, and you know.
Let's go to that cigar club and let's get a cigar and let's sit down in the lounge and let's like fully inhale and like start freaking out and like puking.
It's late. You guys lace this with fentanyl.
No, it's like you're not supposed to inhale cigars. If you fucking lit up a cigar as someone who is not versed in cigars, who does not smoke cigars or even cigarettes, and you inhaled a cigar,
yeah, that's just like what
would
happen.
You wouldn't have to pretend it was laced. You would just be like going to the cigar club with the worst cigar etiquette. Like, you're the cigar idiot.
You have no idea what you're doing.
If we go to the cigar club and do that, we are literally like intentionally becoming like both like just like a horrible, horrible event inside for them, and also a laughing stock, and I think it'd be so funny.
Smoke the worst cigar, asked to leave.
We are going to do a cigar stream next week.
Where we inhale.
the cigar.
And we puke.
And then we'll be able to sell merch that said RTBS does inhale.
We're going to make an RTBS cigar. It's going to be great.
RTBS cigar?
Yeah, we're gonna have our own flavors. Mine's gonna taste like blueberries.
They're gonna put a CCTV photo of us on the wall like they do for shoplifters, but for people who inhale the cigars. These fuckers inhale the cigars.
They're gonna be police sketches for some reason.
Composites.
Would it be funny to have a merch line where it's pictures of us, but as police sketches?
I think that wouldn't be that hard to, like, I don't want police sketches, I want composites.
Like the digitized computer ones?
Where it's like they take the features that are most like what yours might be, and it comes out of these, like, fucked up... Like, you know the pictures I'm thinking of. There's a specific composite that was so fucked up. It was like my avatar on Tumblr for like 3 years. Like, I want composites like that. That's a great idea. We need to write that down.
You know what's funny? Those apparently work really well. Like, even better than sketches. Like,
yeah.
It turns out one of the things.
I think it's because they're so fucked up. They're like fucked up and resemble you that you remember them more. Like,
yeah.
I guess it turns out that
like, in terms of like human body stuff, human bodies aren't made of that many different parts. Like, if there's a god, his like character creator is not as expansive as you think it is.
He's dragging that shit control alt delete style.
Copy and pasting.
Yeah, there's only so many noses and so many like lips to pick from. Penis A, penis B. That's really it.
It is penis A through D.
Yeah, you think there's a lot, but really there's all like right. four.
All right, I am in accord. Let's scroll on over to penis E, as in email.
Yeah, let's do like one.
Can I use the bathroom real quick?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, I'll be back real quick.
We should do just one email, because I want to go eat.
Yeah, probably one.
Almost been recording
good email.
for two hours.
We accidentally had too much to say.
This is our video.
Baldur's Gate
episode.
3 extends sessions even outside of the game.
Yeah.
We're supposed to, you know, we're a video game podcast, except we're not.
We are?
No, we're not.
We might be more of like a food and urine podcast than
That's a good point.
America's number one food/urine podcast. I don't know if that's a badge of honor I want to wear.
Hmm.
Oh, I found that chunk of tooth that fell out.
Jesus.
What?
It's fucked up.
This is all going in the podcast, by the way.
Yeah, everybody's gonna... It would be so funny if Balp left in, like, 2 to 3 minutes of dead air of us just not even trying.
Let me hit this cigar.
It's like you yelled into it.
Let me hit the cigar.
That would be great. Yeah, time to smoke it, and you put it in your mouth and just start yelling.
Yeah, just blow all the fucking leaves out.
Yeah,
it
just gums out the other end. Tom and Jerry hottest sex.
I was about to say. Oh.
All right, hey. let's get an email about.
All right, this is it. We're doing one email. We're only doing one email this week.
Yeah, genuinely one.
Really? You guys only want one?
Yeah, just one. I want to go.
We've been going for almost 2 hours, man.
Nobody's gonna listen to all this.
Yeah,
that's your fault. All right.
Yeah,
all
right. It's our fault. We're only doing one.
Bob, you and I can stay, and we'll do some extra ones.
Yeah, fuck it.
Wow, Bob doesn't love me. Okay.
Anyway.
Well, I had a few picked out, but I guess I'll pick. Hold on, give me
pick
some
the
time.
Best. Pick the best one.
Yeah. Give me some time.
I love that he didn't comment on that
because he knows it's not true.
Huh?
It's because he knows it's not true.
Balp, if you didn't hear that, it doesn't matter because the consequences are still taking act. They're happening.
All right, so I guess for time reasons, we're only doing one email. This one says, Confessions of an Ex-Podcaster. Hey, RTVS crew and friends. I have a confession. For a short time, I ran a podcast from late 2019 to 2020. It wasn't very good, but I ran it. Hey, I know how that feels. I mean, really, really bad. I guess I don't know how that okay. feels. That's not the confession part. At one point, you guys had a podcast channel in your Discord. I think we still do.
We still do.
Yeah, it's for discussion of our podcast.
Where your listeners would post questions. Yes, for a short time, we did a lot of questions there.
Yep.
Back when the podcast was smaller, it was more manageable. I would go in that channel and pull questions and use them for my podcast.
Oh my god.
I don't think I ever used the question you guys talked about on your podcast, but...
Anonymous email? This fucker doesn't want us to track them down?
I will keep them anonymous. I'll say that. for your own safety. I don't think I ever used the question you guys used on your podcast, but I was thinking about it recently, and I don't think I ever told anyone about my perfect crime. Not even my crewmates. That's funny. And at this point, my podcast has been dead for 3 years. So yeah, have you guys ever held on to a secret? And if so, what is it? Level 9. That is.
It's a secret. By. Dumbass, I'm not telling you.
Is that really the question?
Hey, RTV's fans, can you tell us your greatest secret, please?
I mean, they shared their secret.
Well,
that's
then
their
you have
mistake.
To let me deliberate for a moment about a secret that I can say on a fucking podcast.
Yeah, I don't know. What? I don't keep secrets. I don't have a secret.
That's your secret.
One time when I was in third grade. What?
Oh no, his cigar.
It flew out of his mouth.
You know, that's true. I don't keep secrets. I'm not doing shit that I need to keep secret.
The, like, one or two I have are going to my fucking grave, so I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's no...
I mean,
yeah,
I think, with I think everyone has something that they would not tell people. You don't tell every single thing about you to people.
Yeah.
Like, I have secrets that I know that are, like, things that people have, like, trusted in me that I'm not gonna tell other people, you know?
Can you just go,
like,
ahead and tell me the secret that would ruin the most relationships in your life immediately? Can I want to know
yeah,
that
I'm
one.
Thinking about
just,
I've been selling your blood.
I've got the evil blood that tells me to kill you.
And I'm buying it. He's been selling your blood and I've been buying it. I'm the client. Not even Balb knew that.
I've been
it was
sneaking
anonymous.
Over to your house and I've been using a catheter on you while you're sleeping and draining your blood and selling it on the black market.
And then I buy it, and then I bottle it and put it in my walls for later.
I've been buying my own blood.
I'm wondering, though, what did the people that you were doing the podcast with, where did they think the questions were coming from?
Maybe it was a solo endeavor.
Were you lying to them and saying, like, oh, we have a million fans, and they're asking us questions every day, guys? Like, I like the idea of running a podcast and, like, tricking your co-podcasters into thinking that you have way more attention than you actually do. Like, look, you Google, like, big graph and you just show them, like, a random bar graph and it's like, look at our views. We're doing so good.
The only secret I can think of is Wayne is responsible for the death of 4 hitchhikers back in 2015.
Yeah, I said that the other day, didn't I?
Did you?
Yeah, I literally, like, I don't remember why I admitted that, but I did. I did. We were all hanging out in a voice call, and I said that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you did.
But you said, did you? That's why you said it. Why would you have said that if you didn't remember me saying that? I was responsible for the death of 3 hitchhikers in 2017,
I was found not guilty. In 2015. Or is that a separate
incident?
Well,
the numbers don't matter. I'm always killing people.
I
mean, no offense to the, offense to you. I picked your email as the only email we'd be answering on this question because your confession is awesome.
It was fun.
I'm like digging through my mind right now of, like, something I could confess about that, like, doesn't actually matter, but is something I haven't told anyone.
I agree with Gurr. Like, there's no in-between. Any secret that's that gray, I would never reveal it. And then anything that's, like, innocent enough that I could say it, I probably have said it for comedy reasons. Like,
yeah, that's why I'm digging. Yeah. Because here's the thing. Like, yeah, like, if something like that that you probably said for comedy reasons, that's true. Like, we've all told, like, a million anecdotes across all the things we've done over the years. But, there's no way that there isn't something that you've never said, right? It's hard to find
the cross section of thing that you've never said, but thing that you've retained in your memory. Like, there's lots of things I've never talked about, but it's because I've forgotten that I've done them. I don't remember them.
I actually have something. It's a story based around a secret.
Ultimate secret.
No, it's a story about
it. It has to be something you've never told anyone.
It's a mega secret. It's such a secret that he's downplaying it, but it's so secretive.
When I was like 4, I played with some matches and I didn't tell my parents about it until I was like 24.
Damn.
I didn't even cause any fire.
You know, I've never told anyone that. One time I lit a paper towel on fire in the bathroom and then it was in the sink, so I just turned the water on.
Yeah.
Well,
I was like 10.
It didn't burn down your school?
I was in my house. That would be really crazy.
Burn down your school?
Ethereal jaunting fire is teleporting into other buildings. Okay, no, I have one. I have one.
You
and I mean,
have
your
one?
Your opinion might change of me.
Oh man.
After this is all like right. I've never told anyone this. Okay. This is real. Yeah, this is real and I've never told anyone this.
Yep.
Last night I jerked off to completion. No one knew that.
That's true.
Thanks for listening to the podcast.
I didn't want to know that. God damn it.
I spanked my meat until something came out of it. And now I won't tell anyone what came out.
The last voyage of the Demeter.
It was an elixir.
Now.
All right. Something That's the end of the podcast.
Something evil's on this ship.
They call him Dracula.
Oh my god.
Is the episode over?
Are we done?
Is the episode done?